There's a whole lot of things I want to tell you about. Adventures, dangerous and queer. Some you could guess, and some I've only hinted at. So please lend me your ear.
Everyone has a relationship with gender. What's your story? Hello and welcome to Gender Stories with your host, Dr. Alex Yantafi.
Welcome to another episode of Gender Stories, and I'm thrilled to be here with October Bryan. October was born in a small Pentecostal coal mining town in the Appalachian Mountains. She struggled to express her true self from a very early age. When October's femininity was spent with hate, anger, and abuse, she retreated into a series of approval-seeking fake persona. The Pentecostal pastor in training, the meek academic bookworm, the rebellious grad school party boy, the small-town psychology professor. None of her false identities gave October any sense of peace. When she moved to the diverse haven of LA, she finally came out as a proud transgender woman. While healing her traumas and beginning her transition, she wrote and published her first novel, The Beginning of October, heavily inspired by the pain in her past and her hopes for the future. And she has recently released a new murder mystery novel, The Book of Mona Han, which is really wonderful. So, you know, really Gender Stories readers, get it, read it. We're going to talk about it, and hopefully you'll feel motivated to get the book. But I've read it. I've had the privilege to read it, and it's great. October is also co-written and released her debut album, Homecoming, co-written and produced by American Idol runner-up and chart-topping artist Blake Lewis. And for more on October, you can check out our website, octoberryan.com, which, of course, is also going to be in the episode description. Welcome, October. What a wonderful pleasure to have you on Gender Stories.
Thank you, Alex. It's wonderful to be here. Sorry, my dog picked the precise moments that we start making noise.
That's okay. I mean, it's wonderful to have pups on the interview. We've had like baby noises in interviews, pup noises. They're all welcome. And now that we have both the audio just on podcast listening platforms and the video on YouTube, people also get to see the puppies or the babies. So that's wonderful.
I may bring her back at some point, but she's in her naughty corner at the moment.
So. Oh, that's okay. If she comes back, we will welcome her and make her part of the interview. I'm pretty sure nobody's going to mind a little bark here and there. We understand. So I would love to talk with you, first of all, around your writing. Right. It's lately I feel I've been talking to a lot of people about the role that writing has had in their gender journey. And it sounds like, especially with your first novel, that's definitely been part of your writing. And so, yeah, anything that you want to share about how your writing has kind of been part of your own gender journey and your own self-understanding?
Yeah, I mean, the writing has saved me. I really, really struggled with transitioning and coming out. And I've never been good at expressing my feelings to people. I'm always kind of on high alert, like, I'll say what you want me to say, so you just don't probe any farther. But when I started writing, I started finding my voice. And the music, you know, was great for me to express my emotions. But I wanted to write a book that was, it's not an autobiography. I had to tell my mother that. she's like, oh my God, this really happened. I'm like, no, calm down. But it was inspired by my life. And I realized when I finished it that it was so much more about my perspective than I even realized. In fact, that's when I actually legally changed my name to October. It was after I wrote the book and saw the meaning that that had for me. So, I mean, really just the writing has saved me in so many ways.
That is really wonderful to hear. And I know that's very much true for me as well. Even though I write nonfiction, I still feel that when I write, it really helps me better understand myself, better understand people. And I'm really curious whether you were writing before or if your writing really started to thrive and flourish after you started to come out even to yourself. I mean, I don't know. For me, there was definitely a process of figuring it out for myself, right? Nobody usually tells you, hey, you're trans. So I wonder what that process was like for you.
So I wrote so much when I was a little kid. I had this book series called Reuben the Robin. I can still picture it. And I wrote song lyrics all throughout college too. But when I entered the work world, like the adult life, I suppose you'd say, I blocked all that out and I just put it to the side. And I didn't really start doing it again until right before I officially came out. I'd been playing with drag a little bit, and you know, the first time I felt free to do that, and I was realizing how good it was to express myself the way that I'd always wanted. So the writing just kind of came naturally from that. And then the more I did it, the more I wanted to do. I mean, I have a spreadsheet on my computer of all 7 books in this particular series I'm writing right now. It's my favorite thing in the world.
That's wonderful. So it's going to be a 7 book series. I know that's a book one. I know there is more coming, but I didn't know how many. So now I know we can look forward to many more books from you in this series. And I'm very excited personally. So let's talk about your new book, The Book of Monahan. So you went from more kind of, you know, fictional, but kind of inspired by things in your life, first book, to more of kind of a mystery series. So yeah, tell me about why a mystery series. I also don't want to give people spoilers, so just share whatever you want to share about the Book of Monahan and the series generally, and what inspired you to write this series.
Yeah, I was a big fan of a show called Father Dowling Mysteries when I was a little mm-hmm. kid. I really wanted to be Sister Stephanie. I kind of still do want to be Sister mm-hmm. Stephanie. But I've always loved true crime, mysteries. There's something about being presented with a question that's really, really difficult, but knowing that there will be an answer and you're going to be the one that navigates that. There's something really fulfilling about that for me. I think it's because my whole life was a question that I was always trying to figure out. So I love, again, I love spreadsheets. So I love having seeds and clues and red herrings and all these things that intertwine into one long story where I know the answer, but the reader doesn't. That's really, really satisfying for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there's something about, I think that, like you said, mystery, where there is a sense of like, everything will become clear, right? Which often is not like life, unfortunately. So life's a little more complicated than that. But often in mysteries, I feel like either trans and queer people don't exist, or if we exist in those worlds, we don't fare well, right? Often trans folks are depicted as either the villains or the victims. And so I'm wondering how you navigated, again, without giving too many spoilers to listeners, but how did you navigate representation in something like a mystery series when it comes to LGBTQIA+ characters?
I really wanted to be very intentional with the character. I didn't want it to be a huge dramatic reveal. I didn't want the character to be kind of the idea that they're transgender dominating every aspect of their life. So I made the intention to not even reveal who is transgender until a couple of chapters in. And it's, again, that's not part of the mystery. It hopefully comes off very organically. But no, I agree. That's when I started writing, I realized that there are so many types of people who are not represented, especially as a main character. So that was really exciting. It's a little nerve-wracking because when I was writing the beginning of October, that was a trans female who was based on me. That may or may not be the case in this book. I guess that's a tad bit of a spoiler. So I wanted to make sure that I was being sensitive and that I wasn't saying or doing anything that would make anyone uncomfortable in the queer community. So there's a little bit of pressure there, but no, I'm really proud of it and the way that reveal came out. I was really happy with it.
Yeah, and I love what you said, that the reveal is not part of the mystery, right? Because often it's like, yes, I mean, some of us remember the terribly transmisogynistic, like Rubio and the Crying Game, for example, in terms of movies, and obviously, you know, trans folks usually want to replicate this, that kind of cis-centered representation. And so I'm really curious about how did you navigate writing a character that was not, that maybe had an experience that was different from your own as a trans person, right? Did you like feel like you were drawing from community knowledge? Did you ask feedback from other folks? Everybody navigates that process a little bit differently. So I'm curious about your process as a writer in navigating this.
Like I said, it was something I took very seriously. I don't have a large network of people. I've been in LA several years, but it's very difficult to make actual connections here. So what I tried to do, honestly, is I started from a place of, you know, my dream person. I have to be so careful here not to do spoilers. But I really thought of someone who identified as the gender that they are, regardless of it being cis or trans. That was my starting point. So again, it wasn't that I was trying to hide who was who. It's that this person is the gender that they are. And there are so many qualities attached to that. And then, it probably wasn't the best way, but I'm a big fan of a podcast called Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men. Mm-hmm. And one of the hosts, are you familiar?
A little bit, yes.
Oh, okay, great, yeah. And I started listening before one of the characters transitioned, and I was so in the closet back then. And so it really, honestly, was very educational for me. I've learned more about the queer community from that podcast than I have my own life experiences. So I kind of tried to base it on one of the, not base it, let's be careful, slightly inspired by a lot of the experiences that one of the hosts had shared throughout those podcasts. So,
yeah, and I love that you said inspired by, right? Because I think we do need to kind of see ourselves sometimes to understand ourselves, right? I believe that this week while we're recording, it's actually Banned Books Week. And I was really thinking about this idea of like what happens when we can see ourselves, right? I know that for myself, you know, growing up in the 70s in Italy, there wasn't a lot of representation. Luckily, anime and manga were really popular. And so I remember that, you know, I think the title in English is The Rose of Versailles, and it's this character is assigned female at birth, but it's actually very masculine, and it's like the guard, one of the guards of Marie Antoinette, right? And I didn't know that I was trans when I was in elementary school, but I was so attached, right, to this TV series because the part of me was like, oh, you know, trans mask representation, we could call it nowadays, but that's not what was happening in the 70s in Italy. I've never met a trans mask person that I knew of, right? And so, yeah, I'm really thinking a lot about books and representation and what happens when we can see experiences that maybe we don't have yet language for, or when we hear experiences through podcast episodes and so on. And so I'm wondering what that process of finding yourself was like for you as somebody who was, like you said in your bio, you know, brought up in a small coal mining town in the Appalachian Mountains. Maybe, I don't know if there were trans folks in your community or not, or yeah, I'm just curious about your own journey of finding yourself and whether books or other people's writing had a role in that.
I was so in the closet. I mean, there were no openly trans people where I grew up. There were no openly gay people where I grew up. To admit any kind of gay stereotype was even something that was heavily judged. I'm processing a lot of trauma now from the church that I went to. I literally thought I was going to hell every day until I was in my early 20s. And, you know, you hear that and it's like, oh, that sucks. But to think about a little kid whose daily reality is I'm going to the eternal place of punishment. I'm so passionate about understanding and really letting people know about the trauma that's being caused in churches every day. It's something that I think people don't want to talk about because they don't want to be offensive, but there are kids killing themselves because of what you're experiencing in these churches. And religion, you know, plays a big part in in the Book of Monahan for that reason. I didn't even see a gay person that I related to until the real world, New Orleans. There was a person named Danny. And so I came out as gay when I was 24. But then I just had such a hard time with that I really retreated my gender. I was comfortable, you know, having sex with men, but in some ways I felt like I had to overcompensate. Like, I can't be the girly gay because that's too far. And people would compliment me, you know, not knowing that it was harmful, saying, "Oh, I'm just so glad you're not one of those femme gays." Oh. And, you know, deep down I knew I was, but I couldn't even consciously go there. So it really wasn't until I moved to LA when I was 39 that I started allowing myself to admit things that I love that are super femme. I mean, I still have a hard time expressing my femme side, to be honest. And deep down, I know I am like the twirliest, girliest girl that I've ever known in my life. It's just so hard for me to express that because of the trauma. So unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of fiction that inspired me. If anything, it was people brave enough to share their authentic stories, be it Danny through the real world or more recently, RuPaul's Drag Race. Several of the transgender characters there have been a huge inspiration for me. Sasha Colby has been so crucial in my coming out experience over the last few years. So, it's interesting that I'm pursuing the world of fiction, but it really is kind of those real authentic heroes that have inspired me the most.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense because we've had so much more visibility even over the last decade when it comes to trans representation, which I think has been really wonderful and life-saving, like you said, for a lot of people, because unfortunately, you know, we are just at the, you know, just after September, which is also Suicide Prevention Month, I believe. And, you know, in our community, suicidality is 10 times the rate of cisgender communities, mostly because, you know, sometimes it's hard for trans folks not only to face all the systemic violence in the world, but even to conceive ourselves, right, in a world where we are at best erased and at worst, you know, murdered or represented as villains and so on. And so I am curious, in your own writing, why you chose to go more the fictional route than the non-fictional route, whether you thought about writing a memoir, especially given that your first book really does draw on your experiences. What made you go like more the fictional route than the non-fictional memoir route, for example, that some trans folks have gone down?
Simple answer, fear.
Yeah, that's fair. That's legit. Yeah.
It's really hard for me to go back to some of the real experiences that I've had. It's safer for me to create a world where I know things will end okay, for me to explore them. But I actually am working on an autobiography right now. I hope to have it out next year. But it's still going to be... It's going to have a creative thread that I think is protecting me still a little bit. It's going to be kind of like song lyrics as a tool to explore my life. So yeah, it's a fear thing, and it really is.
I really hear that, honestly, because I have been having this like vague idea about a memoir, but like a spiritual memoir for some time, and I'm like, do I want to put this out there? Do I not want to put this out there? Do I want it to be partially fictional? Because there is a little bit of a protective shell that we grow also as trans folks in a very transphobic world, right? And especially when we've experienced rejection or trauma, both, you know, familial or religious, that can be fear. So I really feel that, I empathize with you on that. And I love that you're bringing music into it, right? And song lyrics, because music, I think, is another way in which sometimes we can make sense of ourselves. And so you both write and make music. So how do you see the relationship between those two different things? Do you feel like they express different sides of you? I think, Carla, you said, you know, with songs, it's more about emotional processing maybe compared to other types of writing. So yeah, I would love to hear a little bit more about your process and how you move from one style of writing to another, right?
I started writing song lyrics. That was, you know, if we're talking about adult me. And in a different way, it's like a puzzle for me that's very satisfying. So finding words that rhyme, finding the right number of syllables to say a phrase that you want to say, it's very much a puzzle in a unique way. And it's, I love writing music a little bit more than I like writing books. But I think it's very autobiographical for me. Every song I've written, and I've written all but one of the songs on my first two albums, they come from a very, very deep place. And if I always tell people, if you want to know me or you think you know me, listen to some of the songs I've written. Then you will know me better than any conversation you've ever had with me. That's where I feel the safest. You know, writing fiction, it's a different kind of puzzle that I enjoy. It's, you know, I have these characters. I know how they relate to each other. I know where I want them to end up. How do I get them there in a way that's unpredictable, but also logical? It surprises you, but it makes sense based on what you know. So I have a little touch of obsessive compulsive disorder. And so these two areas, it's really about problem solving for me. And it's so fun.
Yeah, I mean, some of us love attention to detail, right? And I love that you keep mentioning like puzzles, because in a way there's different types of puzzles. And sometimes figuring out the word trans can be its own puzzle, right? And so I'm wondering what that tipping point was like for you, right? Because in your bio you say, you know, you tried all these different types of approval-seeking personas, right? What is going to work? And so it sounds to me like you were very much trying to solve the puzzle of October, right? Who is October? How do I find myself? And again, I have a lot of empathy. I think a lot of trans folks go through that. I know I went through my own kind of puzzle and journey to find myself. And so I'm wondering, like you said, you know, a piece of it was moving to LA, but what was it that allowed you to go into, actually, I'm not a gay man, I'm a trans woman, right? Because you were talking about like overcompensating, because I think it is different for everybody. And I'm wondering if your own journey could be helpful to one of the listeners.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was during the COVID lockdown when I finally admitted that I was trans. And I had a podcast called The Positive Psychology of Pop Music that I did, and I had just interviewed one of my good friends about the Black Lives Matter movement. And listening to him talk about all of these systematic ways that culture just accepts racism. You know, it's not that you're racist or you're not, it's that it's so built in that we don't even see it when it's happening.
Yes.
And I started looking at my life through that lens, through the same thing, but with gender. Mm-hmm. And I had this euphoric feeling when we ended the interview. I put on a wig immediately and was just kind of like flitting around my apartment. But then I had a panic attack because I realized what being trans meant for me. And it meant potentially losing family members. It meant, you know, having to redo my entire life in my mind. So I went to the American Psychological Association website, and I spent hours looking for what might make you think you're trans when you're not. What disorder might make you think you're transgender? I was so desperate to find another answer for the way that I felt. And, you know, a panic attack, crying for hours, and then I finally was brave enough to take the gender dysphoria survey that they have. And I scored off the charts. So it really was through the course of that day that I came out, loved it, got terrified, wanted a different answer, and then kind of accepted it. But the accepting it has been, it's been such a process. I actually tried to commit suicide in between my first book and the Book of Monahan, just because it's so overwhelming to look at my life through an honest lens and all the things I've done, all the things that happened to me. It's very, very much a journey that I'm still navigating. I've learned to kind of appreciate that in a way that when I have euphoria, when I have a great feeling, I tell myself, there's going to be so many more of these in ways I haven't even considered yet. And when I kind of latched onto that perspective, I found it to be true that, you know, there will be bad times. There will be days when I just don't feel like I know who I am. But it always comes back to those euphoric moments where I look at myself and I smile and I can't believe I'm finally looking in the mirror without flinching, or, you know, I'm walking around my house naked. Like, that was something that was off limits for me before. So it's a journey, but I'm finally able to say that it's an exciting one that I'm looking forward to.
Well, I'm sorry that you went through that, as many of us do in community, and I'm very glad that you're here. I know that, yeah, for myself, I do a very similar, like, remember that life is surprising, but it cannot surprise you if you're not here for it, right? Like, that's for me, like, that reminder when I'm having a bad day in around suicidality, right? It's like, you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring or what next year is going to bring, because there have been so many surprises in the past, right? And holding on to those euphoric moments, those moments where we see ourselves, can be hard on the rough days, right? But so glad that you're here and that you did hold on to those euphoric moments. I am curious about what would you say to other folks who are maybe in a similar situation, right? That fear, I've heard this. I know I've navigated it for myself. I've supported a lot of people in navigating it as a therapist, you know, especially I know when I work with trans femme folks, there's such a big fear of losing everything, right? My life is going to blow up. I'm going to lose everything, which makes sense because there's so much trans misogyny. And I think there's like different challenges that trans femme folks face for sure. And so there can be so much fear, right? My life is going to be terrible. Everything is going to blow up. And in a way on paper, it looks like you've been thriving in terms of your creativity, actually, since coming out. And so, yeah, I wonder what you would say to maybe other trans feminine folks who are in the throes of, I wish I wasn't trans, or there must be some other reason why I feel this way, right? And are very much struggling with that fear of losing everything.
It's rough. It really is. And I think we have to acknowledge that. I remember hearing the It Gets Better campaign and having a little bit of a negative reaction to that, mm-hmm. because it doesn't always get better for some people, as you yep. mentioned. And I think we have to face that as a reality so we take better care of our folks in the queer community. What I would say to anyone struggling is something that's been said to me for years, but it took me a long time to realize, feelings aren't facts. And I think because I pushed all of my authentic feelings so far down, when they started to come up, they were overwhelming. I don't think I cried in front of anyone until I was in my early 40s, because the feelings were terrifying to me. And so when they came out, they felt overwhelming. They felt like, I can't handle this. This is the end. But it's so helpful to take a step back and go, I didn't feel this way yesterday. I know I did it. So it's possible I won't feel this way tomorrow. Not only possible, it's likely, because I feel so bad right now. It really is just statistically likely that it's going to get better and better. And I love what you said a few minutes ago, Alex. The world can surprise us, but only if we're here and only if we're showing up for it. And so there are so many things that are going to happen to you that you can't hope for yet, because you don't even know that they're going to feel so great for you. You don't even know all the good stuff that's coming. And so really just hold on to that and to ask for help. Don't feel any shame in that. That's why I try to be as open as I can about my suicide attempt. I think we need to normalize those feelings and those fears and address them head on. You know, if you're worried about someone, ask them. Ask them if they're doing okay, if they thought about taking their own life. You're not going to give them the idea. That doesn't happen. But I think some people are just so scared to broach that topic, but we need to talk about it because people going through that need their feelings to be heard and validated.
Absolutely. And I love what you said about feelings are not facts, right? I often talk about that in therapy as well. Like, feelings are valid and they're real, absolutely, but they're not facts. And often our trauma brain tells us terrible things about ourselves, right? And it's very hard because it feels so real, so overwhelming. And I know that writing can be a really good way also of getting those feelings out, right? Because sometimes I can feel almost, I don't know about you, but I know for myself, sometimes the feelings feel like almost too big, right, for the container of our bodies. And so finding a way of expressing them can be so helpful, through song, through writing, through, yes, or, you know, just anything that shifts us out of just keeping it all in our head and in our heart can be so helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious, talking about life surprising us or the world surprising us, was kind of your creativity flourishing something that surprised you after coming out? Because it sounds like you were very creative as a child, but then that kind of dried up, which again, I think it's not uncommon for a lot of trans folks. As more feelings come up, then the creativity goes down because often, you know, that's where the feelings come up and we want to keep them away, right? And so was your creativity flourishing after coming out as yourself, like something that surprised you or something that you're like, this makes sense, or something else? What was your experience of that?
It definitely surprised me in two different ways. I was surprised by how much was coming out. I mean, I've only been doing this for 3 years and I've written, this is my third book and I'm about ready to release my third album. So it's still kind of hard to accept how much is still in there. Like, I have so many more things I want to do. The bigger way it surprised me though was the pride I felt with it. I've never felt proud of anything I did in my life, and I never knew why, because I achieved success in school, in work, in friendships, in relationships, but it never, not one, felt authentic in a way that I was proud of. And it's, you know, I know that there are flaws in everything I do, but I don't care, because it's authentically me. And so the fact that I'm able to talk about these things and just love what I'm doing, regardless of how it's received, that's a new feeling for me. And so that's the biggest surprise.
I love that because, and I so resonate, right? Because sometimes people are like, oh, that, you know, from the outside, these things are successful. But unless we can really feel that's an authentic expression, it can be really hard to own our success. And so it's so wonderful to hear you say, you have achieved a lot. I mean, 3 books and 3 albums in 3 years, it's very prolific. I don't even know how you find the time. I was like, how do you find the time? I know that time is definitely a big challenge for me and my creativity. So just very selfishly, how do you find the time, October, to kind of survive under capitalism and be so creative and productive? In your creativity.
That's a great point, because so far it's certainly not paying for itself.
Yes, that's my experience too. Writing doesn't bring much money generally, even if we're successful in air quotes at it, whatever that means. Yes.
Yeah, I think I made 12 cents off my first album the first few months of that album. The answer is that I'm still struggling, I guess, with being social and being, you know, going out places and trying to meet people. I've never been good at that. And I'm quite fearful. So my therapist is actually trying to help me find a balance. She's like, it's so great that you're being productive creatively, but that's not going to fill the void of people in your life. And so I'm trying to let go of feeling the need to get all of my ideas out there and being okay with them being on the back burner while I try to date or, you know, dance, which is something I love to do. So the balance is rough and it's not easy to find.
My God, I very much hear that. And also, I didn't know that you love dancing. I also love dancing. And so I do have a question for you around dancing and gender, which is something I actually really love to talk about. Have you noticed the difference in your relationship to dance after coming out as yourself? And I'm just really curious if you did you dance before? Did you not let yourself dance before? Basically, your relationship to dance and your gender, because it's such an embodied activity, expression, whatever we want to call it, art, right? And so I'm curious about whether you notice differences in your relationship to dance throughout your gender journey.
That's my favorite question I've ever been asked, Alex.
Yay!
Yeah, you said that so beautifully. I always loved dance, but I was not able to move my body. I took ballroom dancing lessons about 7 or 8 years ago, and you know, I was presenting as a male at the time, and my instructor was trying to get me to loosen up my hips, and she was like, "What's wrong with you?" And she was physically grabbing my body and trying to get the hip to lift. And my mind wouldn't let my body do that. And I wasn't even consciously aware of it. To me, it's still the freakiest thing. But I loved dancing, but I hated dancing in couples because I was having to embody everything I hated about myself. I was getting reinforced for it. And in my arms was the person I wanted to be. Mm. So, you know, I'm very cerebral. Dancing is expressing your emotions without words, without any other connection, just the flow of your body. And so it's the most beautiful thing to me. I could watch Travis Wall choreograph and dance all day long. He's so inspiring to me. I'm so looking forward to getting ready to take ballroom dance lessons again. I'm looking to sign up this month. And so far, that's the biggest euphoric moment to me, to be wearing a dress and to be doing the dances I love as the person that I am. And, you know, being in the arms of a guy, you know, it's something that I wish there weren't such boundaries on areas like ballroom dancing. But I feel like they're starting to open up. But, you know, identifying as a woman, I'm so excited to get back out there on the dance floor.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you. I've actually just started taking ballroom classes again last week after not doing that for like 30 years almost. And it's such a great feeling to go back to it because it is so gendered, ballroom, right? So I've done other types of dancing, but ballroom is so gendered, but I found a lovely studio locally that's so open. You know, our instructor was like, "This is my name. These are my pronouns. What are your pronouns?" You know, and very open to kind of same gender couples, which is always also tricky because the partner I danced with were both trans. And so we're like, and non-binary, we're like, "Do you want to lead? Do you want me to lead? Do we want to switch off? Right? How do we want to do this in a way that's fluid and fun?" Right. Yeah. Rather than kind of rigid, which is more aligned, and really realizing, oh, yeah, even though I'm following, which is something I'm used to doing, it feels totally different to do that, you know, knowing who I am, even if it's the same steps, the body feels like a level of relaxation that is very different than when there were all these expectations that came with that gendered role, if that makes sense.
Totally. I'm so happy that you're getting that experience. I love it.
Yeah, more trans people in ballroom. I have to say the Shangela inspired me with the being on Dancing with the Stars, and we were watching it, you know, and I was like, yeah, ballroom. Why don't I pick up ballroom dancing again? That sounds great. I was like, yes, trans representation in ballroom.
Yes,
more of
I
it, please.
It.
What other, you know, I feel is such a, in some ways, we're living through yet another wave, right, of transphobia. And I say yet another wave because it's not like this is the first time, unfortunately. But it's pretty intense in here on the so-called United States. And so what are the other things that are giving you joy right now? I really have been, you know, we can definitely talk about trauma. And, I mean, I have a whole book called Gender Trauma, so I can talk about trauma all day long. that, I'm also excited about Trans Joy, just because it is such a depressing time at the moment. So what else is giving you joy besides creativity, besides dance nowadays? Where are you finding your nourishment?
Oh, my gosh. I'm a big nerd in terms of comics and video games.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the best things is rereading the X-Men comics I loved as a kid and realizing why I identified with them. There's a character called Psylocke who was literally put in the wrong body.
Yes.
And, yeah. And she was my favorite. And I'm like, why do I like this character so much? I try to read a comic every night, and it's so fun to view them through an adult lens. I'm excited about Halloween because as a gay man, I always felt pressure. Like you have to have a costume that's attractive and mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of irritating. I am going to be Belle from Beauty and the Beast, and I have never been more excited.
I love that. Do you have your costume ready?
I do. I actually bought it 2 years ago, but I wasn't brave enough to wear it. But this year, nothing's going to stop me. I will be Belle.
That is so wonderful. And I love that, right? Because there's so much queer coding in cartoons often. I was just talking about this with Sage Cotugno last week in their interview, because they're in animation, right? And now there is so much more open queer representation, right? The new She-Ra or Owl House, which Sage was one of the folks who worked on that show. Just the queer representation that my kids have, it's like mind-blowing for me compared to how we have to find that queer coding, right, in characters for some of us who are older than, I don't know, 20 years old, let's call it. Nobody, right? And so I love that you're going back to comic books as a form of nourishment. And I'm also wondering if you have favorite new shows that have that kind of better queer representation that you're like, yes, this really speaks to my inner child that didn't have this.
obviously, RuPaul's Drag Race
yes.
is such an inspiration, not just, you know, for the art and the talent of it, but and they go so deep into who they are, and they're so willing to share. That show has definitely had a big impact on me. I don't watch a lot of new television. I've been watching Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I always watch those shows as a kid. And so there's something so freeing about revisiting them now and knowing why I connect with them so well. Mm. I'm trying to think of a new show that I love, but I really have not been watching new TV very much. And of course, the second we're done, I'll think of like three.
Oh, that's okay. But I also love this idea of watching shows again through the lens of knowing who you are, right? That can be so powerful as well in itself. Like I'm watched like Mary Tyler Moore or whatever show, right? And now I know who I am and I'm watching it with totally different eyes. That makes complete sense to me too. So, but yes, I know I'm the same. Whenever I'm put on the spot, I'm like, have I ever read a book or watched a TV show? Even though I do those things every day. No, nothing comes to my mind, right? It's very human. Oh, I feel like I could talk with you all day. This is so fun. And I want to be respectful of your time. And so I will ask you the question that I always ask all our guests, which is there anything we have not talked about that you were hoping we would talk about today?
No, this has been so wonderful. I've just loved talking to you. In fact, I kind of forgot it was an interview, and you know, it just felt so normal and natural. So thank you. I guess I'm getting ready to put out my third album, and I'm very proud of it. It's actually about trauma. It's not depressing, but it's inspired by a lot of the things that happened. You know, getting to write and record my first album with literally one of my idols was such a gift, and you know, I still have to pinch myself that, you know, Blake Lewis is, you know, a friend of mine and did an album with me. Like that still doesn't really compute. So I'm so grateful to him. He actually, and his support was really influential in me being able to come out here in LA. He invited me to things and just such a chill, cool guy. I absolutely love him to death. And I'm working on the sequel to the Book of Monahan, the Book of Betancourt. And I'm really looking forward to getting into these characters at a new place in their lives, because even though I wrote this, you know, less than a year ago, I already feel like I'm in a new place in my life. So there's something really exciting about going back to these characters that I created and being able to, I say, watch them grow as if they're, you know, their own characters, but they kind of are. You know, I'll be writing them and I'll go, that doesn't make sense for that character. They can't do that. So I'm just excited about the books and the music and and dating and things like that. So yeah, it's all good right now.
That's really wonderful. I love to hear some good, solid trans joy. I think we need that right now. And so I hope that the listeners can also really hear just how beautiful and thriving your life is right now, which is wonderful. And so if there's anyone out there maybe struggling or not being in that place, knowing that that can happen is so important, I think. So if listeners want to find your music, want to find your writing, where should they go? Is there anywhere apart from your website, octoberryan.com, that they should go, like social media or, I don't know, other platforms where they can find both your music and your writing?
I've actually pulled off of social media. I have a very minimal presence these days, and it's been great for my mental health. So I try to use October Ryan as the hub. My music is on Spotify, Apple Music, and then my books, they're being sold at a couple of local shops in LA. And then, you know, octoberryan.com is really where I try to house everything.
I love that. I think a lot of people are withdrawing more and more from social media because it's so depleting, I think. And so you're like, yeah, no, come to my website and find me there. Absolutely.
I'm sure it's not good for sales, but, you know, my mental health is more important. So
your mental health is absolutely more important. And I love, what a beautiful statement, I think, to make. Yes, our lives are so much more important than all this pressure of social media. What a wonderful message to end the interview on. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was so fun to have this conversation with you. I can't wait for the second book, having read the first one. I'm very excited that there are six more books that I can look forward to after your first one. And dear Gender Stories listeners and now watchers, for those of you who are watching the episodes on YouTube, I hope that you do read the Book of Monahan as well as October's first book and listen to our albums. And until next time, take care of yourselves.
Thank you so much, Alex.